You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Zielinski and Wes Boss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Syntax. My name is Wes Boss. I'm a full stack web developer from Canada. With me, as always, is Scott Zielinski. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Just hanging out. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Excited to, it's Friday. We usually record on Monday, but because of vacation schedules and whatnot, it's a little bit jumbled up, but I'm getting prepping for a talk on CSS Grid, which I'm excited to give. I'm going to Laracon. So I'm going to be the JavaScript guy going to a PHP conference, giving a CSS talk.
I've been seeing your slides though. They look nice.
Yeah. I'm really happy with it. That's always a fun part of giving a conference talk, is once you're done, you can actually design the thing. And I did this new thing where I did the examples in the slide deck, and I just wrote them in a style tag, and then I wrote some code that would display the style tag and then syntax highlight it. It was really cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah, a little bit of automation there. Nice.
Big fan of that. Anyways, today we're talking about the undocumented web, which is kind of like everything that is scraping, private APIs, proxies, alternative solutions, we say in quotes, kind of necessarily maybe gray area stuff. We're not going to do anything.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, we're not going to do anything illegal today. We're not cops, but we've got some, at some point in your life, you're going to need to do something that there's no clear cut way to do it, and you need to make your own solutions, or so we say. So that's what we'll be talking about today: scraping, faking stuff, automating stuff, proxies, all of that kind of under the table stuff. Today we're sponsored by two awesome companies. The first one is Kyle Prinsloo has a course on freelancing. It's available at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. And as you might know, it's a course on freelancing. Talk a little bit more about that, as well as our tried and true FreshBooks, which is cloud accounting software for anyone who is running a small business or freelancing. So let's get on into it. I actually have quite a bit of experience with the undocumented web, as we're calling it. And Scott, you say you don't have a whole lot of experience with it. Is that right?
I don't. It's mostly just like fun stuff and stuff that I've seen around or picked up. But I have not done this much fun stuff that in my career. So I'm really excited to hear about some of these cool things that you're going to be telling me about, and some of the fun stuff we can all try out.
Totally. It's funny that I was going through this, and I have done quite a bit. And I think it's just because that's really where my love for web development came, is when you have a problem or you're not allowed or being able to do something, then you can often find a way around it. So let's get into it. So what is the undocumented web? It's when the traditional methods of the internet don't give you what you want. So often when you try to build something, you'll be working with APIs, and you'll have limits with that API. You'll have data that you need to get, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. Maybe you don't have access to it. Maybe it's a Friday afternoon and you have to get approved for API access, and they're not going to approve you for 3 or 4 weeks, and you just want to get going with it. Maybe it's just not something the company wants to give you access to, so you have to kind of find your own way around it. At the end of the day, most web developers are hackers, and we want to be able to find a way around these barriers, or basically just solve the problems that we have ourselves. So often these things are quick and dirty. Often they will be very brittle because they can break at a moment's notice. They're not based on any sort of standards. They're just ways that you've found to go around. And if a company were to change their layout, if it's in scraping or plug that hole at any point, then the whole thing will come crashing down. So I first got into the undocumented web was one of my first projects was a website called DealPage. And I had built this thing where back in the day, and if you want to hear a little bit more about the story, go and check out episode 8, which is my origin story. And it's kind of how I really got into building apps from websites. And basically Groupon and all these websites were really popular, and I wanted a way to put them all on one page. And you can also get like big bucks by referring people to these things. So what I did is I built this thing that would go off to every single website, and some of them had APIs that you could hit and get the latest deal and pull it in, but a lot of them didn't. And what I had to do is I had to scrape the page, parse the HTML. I used this thing called PHP query because like the only language I knew at the time was, well, I knew JavaScript and jQuery, but there was no such thing as Node at the time, and there was no such thing as like scraping libraries that we'll talk about. So someone had written the entire PHP, the entire jQuery library in PHP. So what you could do is you could pull an entire website and then parse it and look for like an H2 tag and an image tag with the class of featured image and a span with the class of price. And I would pull all of those out and then put them all on one big website, which is really cool. So that's kind of what first got me into working with the undocumented web. So what we're going to go through today is talk about undocumented APIs, faking stuff, scraping stuff, automating stuff, proxying stuff, a couple tips and tricks. And then I also asked on Twitter what your stories are, hashtag not a cop. And some people had some pretty pretty fun stories. It's kind of fun. And this is Twitter, too. I'm sure if you had a couple beers with some developers, I'm sure some of the really good stories that would start to come out as to what they did. Let's do undocumented APIs. This is probably the simplest version, where a lot of times companies will not make their data available via a JSON API for you, but they will have their own API because their own product is likely built in something that needs to ingest an API and pull the data in. So a really good example is Instagram. Instagram has an API, but they have pretty much locked it down over the last couple of years. They don't approve anyone's application. They don't want anybody using Instagram in any way other than the Instagram application. So if you want to pull in a list of your most recent Instagram photos, or if you want to pull in anyone's most recent photos, you can't do that because the way to do is to apply for an API token, and they will always deny you no matter what you try to do. Believe me, I've tried many, many times. So what you can do is you just pop open your dev tools, take a look at, click on the XHR tab in the network. So go to your network tab, click on XHR, then refresh the page or click around, and you're going to start seeing the requests come in. And you're going to see, oh, okay, Instagram has their own internal API. Then you can start figuring out what the URLs are in order for you to hit those endpoints. And in many cases, there's sometimes some stuff with like cores and cross-origin stuff. We'll talk about that in our upcoming Hasty Treat as well. But you can use that API in your own stuff. It will change at some point. I've done it many times myself, and they will just break it on you. But it's an option if you need to be able to pull in a list of Instagram. I use it on my wife's website, and it's been only broken once in about a year.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny because I think that the network tab is kind of underrated.
Yeah.
You know? I love the network tab. I spend so much time in there for various reasons, but you can find out so much good information if you just like take the time to paw around or even understand what's going on there. There's so much good stuff to find out there. So this is just one more thing that you can use the network tab for.
It's true. Even in the dev tools, there's like breakpoints that you can set that are like calls a breakpoint at an XHR request. And if you want to know, like, what are they firing off? You could, like, if you just hover over something, they'll fire off an XHR request to, like, put in their database. This user hovered over these pants, right? Maybe start to remarket them these specific pants. It's kind of interesting just to dig into, like, how people say, oh, you can't view source on websites anymore. But I think the view source now is just watch the network tab, watch all of the different things, watch how when you interact with a website, different things get fired off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can learn so much that way.
One other thing I've done with this is in Canada, we have, I think in the States, you've got Realtor as well, right? And when you buy a house, you have to go through Realtor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know you have better stuff like Zillow and whatnot, but in Canada, we really have
Zillow in Canada?
We do, but it's like not that good. And we basically have like the mafia, which is Realtor, and they are the only place to go through if you want to look at what's for sale. And their application it's gotten better in the last like 6 months, a year, but it's still pretty garbage and it's really frustrating to use. And it seems like they don't necessarily care because they have like a monopoly on this thing. So what's cool about that is you can, again, what I've done in the past when we were looking for a house, this was 5 years ago, you pop it open, you do a couple different searches, and you'll be able to figure out what are the different query params that they're sending to their own API, and how can I replicate that? And I built my own little thing that would just like every 3 hours, it would hit this API and pull in the new listings and then display them to me on a nice clean page or populate them on a map or something like that. And I love that kind of thing because you're scratching your own itch. It's not necessarily going to be an application everybody wants to use, but it could definitely be something that could make your day much better.
Yeah, nice. Now, I see we have here React DevTools, like utilizing React DevTools on sites that are up. I think this is pretty cool because if you have React DevTools, I mean, chances are they're smushed their sites and their components are all not their correct names, but you can still paw around and find some stuff. And sometimes it's really interesting to go ahead and just change some props. Now, don't go changing any props on Level Up Tutorials because it's not going to get you anywhere. Obviously, my password protected stuff is still all, you know, server verified. But, you know, changing user interface things will only give you access to user interface things. But it's really cool to be able to do that on some websites and really like see how they work more so than in doing anything nefarious. But like just to go in and like, oh, okay, so they have these props, you can toggle these props, you can maybe change these values and see how it actually affects the rendering on the on screen of that given site. It's really pretty sick.
If you pop open on Instagram.com, if you pop open the React DevTools and you change the number of likes from like, 20 to down to 9, and Instagram after 10 likes, it displays the number. Before 10 likes, it displays a list of users who have liked it, right? So if you change the number of likes to 9, it will just re-render that part of the application, show you the first 9 people that have liked it. And then if you change it to 10,000, it will just go in and re-render it. And then I think if you like go up to like 100,000, it will change it to like 100.2K, that many likes. And that's why I always use that in my React workshop, because it shows people these are React DevTools. And also it's kind of an early look into the whole templating is based off of the data. You change the data, the templating changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty funny. You could also scam your your social media fans by posting a photo and being like, look how many likes I got on this. And totally. Then they can verify, and then delete the photo and be like, oh yeah, but I took it off though. I got 10,000 likes, but I didn't like the photo, so I took 10,000
likes and take it down. That's great. Yeah. I actually did that again. I gave away some stickers 2 days ago and I had 1,200 people enter as leaving a comment on the stickers. And the way that I picked the winners is that I loaded up all the comments. I had a click load more like 400 times. And then I just went into the React DevTools and got an array of all of the different comments. And then you can just randomly pull values from that array, which I thought was a very developer way to give them away.
Yeah, very, very developer. Very developer. I'm sure there's like services that you could pay a certain amount of money to do all that for you. But that's there you go. You have the skills. You have a neat, unique set of skills and abilities to handle that. So you might as well. This one's less of an undocumented API sort of thing and more of just an interesting API sort of thing. There was a really great talk at Zeit Day this year from Simon Wilson, where he discovered all of these XML files of data from the city of San Francisco, like every single tree, what type of tree, with the location of that tree and when it was planted, all sorts of stuff like this. Wow. There's tons of stuff. And so he got really interested in it and ended up building this thing called Dataset. Now, Dataset is a tool for publishing data APIs. You could sort of think of it as like you upload some data, and then all of a sudden you have an API to hit off of that you can build things. So let's say you find some data somewhere, you can use this data set to simply just upload it as a CSV, right? And then that actually publishes as an API that you can then hit and build something with. So if you have some data sitting around and you want to transform it into an API without building anything, you can use this data set thing. It's open source. And some of his examples were amazing. It was just super cool because he was building maps that showed you every tree in San Francisco and he built it in no time. And then he was saying, okay, well, let's find the nearest animal near me, and you could publish instantly an animal near me website. It's like, find the nearest red panda near me, and it will find you a photo of the nearest red panda near you and tell you where it is. It was just super cool. So if you're interested in some of these like sort of rogue API stuff, it was one of my favorite talks I've seen recently about this stuff. I was really super interested in what he was doing there. So it's Simon Wilson's talk from Zeit Day. We'll post a link in the description. It was really, really super cool.
That's really at the heart of what this kind of stuff is, undocumented web, where you take, maybe there is data that is available, but it's not in the format that you want it. You can't really use it how you want it. And people, you build like a layer on top of the data that allows you to actually build your own stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
One little other thing I want to say is that often if a website is just server rendered, there's no way for you to get an API, and that's where you have to often reach for scraping. But what a lot of people who do stuff before they even reach for scraping, what they'll do is they'll see if they have an iPhone app or an Android app, because often the website is server rendered, but they also have an API that their different applications will use and talk back and forth to, because if you're building an iPhone app, there is no server rendered. It has to hit ping a server to get that data pulled in, right? So one tool you can use to do that is called Charles Proxy. And what Charles Proxy will do is you can put it on your Mac, and it will listen to, like, you can hook it up to an Ethernet port or your Wi-Fi, or you can also like proxy your iPhone through it. And then it'll capture absolutely every single packet and request that your computer makes. And then you can write these filters it's a little bit hard. It took me a while to get it, but you can write these filters that will filter for specific kinds of requests or different names of requests. And then you can just go ahead and start surfing on the iPhone app. And then it will start logging all of the different requests that you have. If it's an SSL, you have to, of course, install a certificate in the middle that will allow you to step in and touch that. But I thought it was really cool. It's such a super helpful. I've also used it for just web development in general. When you have like a really hard something where the requests aren't debugging, or I did a lot of work where it had to be on a VPN, and sometimes a VPN was debugging, it was buggy, and I was able to use Charles to just peer into that and get a full look at, it's one level lower than the network tab, because it's the entire network layer of your machine.
Yeah. You know, this Charles site reminds me of like that era of websites.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? When like Transmit first came out, there was like all sorts of these websites. They all had a sort of similar look. This is like this is maybe when I first started really getting into like web 2.0 style design stuff. This, like, I just came to this website and it like took me right back. It took me right back there.
The looks really nice. Background gradient of the tabs are PNGs. Yeah. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Or hopefully even a sprite.
And I think the font is an image for the header, because it has that little inset. You can't select it. Yeah, this is like classic web 2.0. I love this. I wish this would come back.
It's got the 1999 doc type and everything.
Dude, this is dope.
That's great. All right, let's move on to the next one, which is faking. So another way around it. Sometimes you can find these APIs, but there's obviously a security layer that you need to get by, and they will only let specific people by. And the most basic example is if you're using some sort of like web scraper, the user agent of that scraper will be PhantomJS or Headless Chrome or something like that. And often websites will as a very basic way to stop you, they will just block requests that are coming from Headless Chrome.
You should mention what a user agent is first.
Yes. Okay. So a user agent is a string that comes along with any browser. So any Chrome, Firefox, Headless Chrome, a weird browser on your mom's Samsung phone, you know, like all kinds of different stuff. And they will all have a unique user agent. And that's a way for you to tell information about what type of browser is requesting the data. And it's really confusing because Chrome's user agent says Mozilla in it. And there's a whole story. And that's also why you should never sniff a user agent to try to figure out. When Web 2.0 was getting really popular, or like CSS 3, people would say, like, if this is IE 11, then use this. And that's really bad, because what you want to do is you want to feature detect. You want to say, does it support border radius?
Right.
Not, is it IE 11 or greater? Because there was this huge bug that came out where when IE 10 came out, people were parsing IE 6, IE 7, IE 8, IE 9, and then they parsed IE1 because they were just capturing the IE plus whatever came, the first number that came after the word IE. So you were saying if IE1 is technically less than IE9, so then it was saying your browser is not supported. But in reality, people were on the latest version of IE, not IE1.
Yeah. What? Oh, man, what was that library that you used for feature detection right around then?
Yeah,
I don't know why it's on totally.
Or Modernizer. What?
Modernizer. Yeah, dude, it's been so long since I've thought about Modernizer. Yeah.
It's true. I haven't had to use that in years. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's cool.
I guess because CSS has at supports now. So a lot of that is use case. Some other fun stories about faking stuff. I don't know if I've told the story or not, but I got free Wi-Fi on a plane because they had this like thing where like if you use your BlackBerry, you can get free Wi-Fi. So I faked my user agent with Chrome to be a BlackBerry Pearl or something silly like that. And I logged onto the Wi-Fi and then I flipped it back to regular Chrome and I was able to just like cruise through the internet.
I think that's one of my favorite stories of like, you know, you're not hurting anybody. Yeah. It's not doing anything like, but it's still kind of iffy, but it's still at the same time, like who cares? I love that story. That's one of my favorite ones.
Oh, that's good. And also faking in Chrome DevTools, you're able to copy requests and you can copy all of the, like you can copy as a curl. What curl is it's kind of like a fetch or a Axios library for just the terminal, and you can curl things and you can download stuff with curl and you can ping URLs. And what Chrome will do is you're able to copy a request as curl. And then what you can do is you can take that curl request and pop it into like a text editor and then figure out what all the properties that have been passed. This is often what I'll do when I'm trying to figure it out. I'll copy it and then I'll just start removing headers and properties that got passed with that request until it stops working. And then at that point, you know, you have your minimum viable request and then you can go in and start changing the different values. And I'll have some more stories about that coming up.
So all of the stuff that we're talking about in this episode is a great way to maybe, you know, have some fun, but it's not necessarily the greatest way to make a lot of money. A great way to make money, though, is taking up freelancing. And what better way to learn freelancing than from this course from Kyle Prinsloo, which will give you access to a whole ton of things that you need to get up and running to really take off freelancing, such as a Freelancing and Beyond ebook, tons of HTML and CSS templates. There's a Slack community, a Facebook community, portfolio website template, a conversion-centered guide, a web creation checklist, a prospective client questionnaire, SEO checklist, client proposal template, and invoicing template. Basically, he's giving you a whole bunch of stuff that's sort of like, here is the stuff you need to get going on freelancing. And again, this is going to be a great way to sort of get all you need in the basics and sort of like set you off on the right foot, right? Because we all need these invoices, agreements, these sort of things to get working, but we also need to have good advice on, you know, how to deal with clients and all that stuff. So if you are interested in checking out this course, head on over to studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. And Wes, do you want to tell us a little bit about the deal he has going?
Yeah. So if you use the code Syntax, you're going to get 25% off. I'm just taking a look at it right now. The complete bundle. See, it looks like you can buy the ebook for $45 or you can buy the complete bundle for $97 on sale right now. I'm not sure how long that will last. But like Scott said, it comes with a portfolio template, SEO checklist, conversion center guide, all those stuff. Because like if you're going freelancing, you need to kind of like hit the ground running because you need to make money like pretty quickly. Otherwise, you're going to go hungry or you can't pay your rent and whatnot. So it looks like this is a pretty good. I did download it and page through it and read the whole thing. But I did download it and page through it to make sure that it was like legitimate and it's not just something that got slapped together, because you do see that fairly often. This looks like some legitimate good content. I would definitely check it out at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. Use the code Syntax for 25% off.
Nice. Yeah, take care of it. And sometimes you gotta spend money to make money, but freelancing can definitely make you a bunch of money. So really super cool. Unlike some of this web scraping that we're about to get into. That was a double segue. I'm segueing back into the content here.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about probably the most popular thing of the undocumented web is scraping. So and what that means is that the data is often available in the HTML of the website and you need to get it out. You just need the raw data. You don't need the whole website that comes along with that. You need to convert it to like a JavaScript object. that contains all of the pieces that you have. So that's what scraping is you download the entire website, and then somehow you parse it so that you pull out the pieces of information that you want. Like, I was downloading an entire Groupon.com/Toronto, and then I was parsing out all of the different spans and the links and all of that good stuff. So it was kind of a fun one. I used PHP query at the time, but now anytime I do any sort of scraping, I reach for a Node package called Cheerio. Node lends itself to this because it's JavaScript at the end of the day. There is a there is another one called Node DOM or something like that, where it simulates the DOM, but Cheerio seems to be a little bit faster. And then Cheerio also gives you, if you're used to jQuery, it will give you like the entire jQuery .find, .children, .value, .text, all of the API that you're used to using to traverse. Because a lot of times with the scraping, you're saying, okay, let me find the H1, and then let me find the sibling paragraph, that's the description. Then let me go up a level, over one, down a level, and then the image inside of there, that's the image I need to pull out. And then let me go up two levels and then find the span that has a class of price, and let me pull the text out of that, or let me pull the alt tag out of that. I was doing that a lot as well. And Cheerio is fantastic for that. It doesn't load the website for you. You still need to use something like Axios or Request or anything to actually download the raw HTML. But then once you have it, you can run it through Cheerio, and it will turn the string of HTML into an actual DOM that you can traverse and use the jQuery methods on.
Yeah. And if you're interested in some like maybe lower level version of this where you're doing a lot more work, but you're learning a lot about how the process of maybe parsing a whole page can work, there was a really great course. It was one of the first courses that Udacity put out, and it was basically building a website crawler with Python. You don't really have to know too much about Python. It teaches you sort of the Python basics as you go. But really what you're doing is you're loading up a page. It's giving you the entire HTML as a string, and you're traversing the site, grabbing different links, going to different pages and finding different information, but you're doing it without any libraries. And I really, really enjoyed that, like the process of getting in there and like grabbing the strings and being able to actually do all this yourself. I felt like it made me a much better developer after I was done with it. I took this like a while ago when Udacity first came out. But if you're interested in, again, learning a little bit more about like the process of that kind of thing, rather than just using a jQuery type package, I really like that course just for to get a handle on maybe some of the ideas behind some of these things. But that Cheerio package is sick. I mean, just the who doesn't love the jQuery syntax for stuff like that?
Totally. It's really, really slick. It's funny. I did something about a month ago with Cheerio, and I hadn't written any serious jQuery in about a year. And I found myself having that opposite effect of, oh, how do you do this in jQuery? Whereas it used to always be the other way around with how do you do this in vanilla JavaScript? I've totally flipped around, and I actually wouldn't mind a vanilla API for it as well, just because that's the way I'm thinking in the last year or so, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
Next up, we have automation. So scraping is great when you have just a URL and you can hit that URL and scrape it, but that's not always a situation. Sometimes you need to log in and fill out a form and then click submit and then do a search and then click on something. And like, there's a whole bunch of steps that need to lead before you even hit that page where you have the thing that you're looking for, the data that you want to scrape. And if that's the case, then you need to like automate those steps where you log in, you wait 10 seconds or you wait for it to resolve and it comes back, and then you click on a button, especially if these things don't have direct URLs. Like if you have like a search that you're searching for like bikes or something like that. That's another good example. Let me tell that story real quick again. I know a lot of you have heard it, but one of my initial things was I would buy and sell road bikes, and I would flip them. And Kijiji, which is like the Craigslist of Canada, they have an RSS feed of bikes, or you can run a search, and you can run a search for a specific, like I had this huge search of every single kind of bike, and then you could get an RSS feed for that, but it would only update like maybe once a day or twice a day, and that was too long, right? And you can also sign up for notifications, but that only comes out once a day. And by the time you got that email, it was too late because the good deals were already gone. So I wrote the scraper that would go to the URL, search for it, and then scrape everything every 3 minutes so that when something did show up that was on my radar, then it would automatically text me and I could view the listing on my phone, and I'd be able to jump on a good deals within 5 minutes of them being posted. And that led to me getting so many more bikes because it was much faster than regular people just searching and doing it when they have time, right?
Yeah, and this is like this gives you so much of a jump on everyone else, right? This isn't a tool that everyone has access to. It's an unfair advantage.
It totally is, and that's why I understand why people don't like it, because like a lot of people just wanted a good deal on a bike, but then
I was
swooping in and scooping up all the deals and then cleaning them, tuning them up, and then selling them back to these people, right? And that also happens with like ticket resellers, right? People will write these bots that will automatically buy up tickets. And one of the big one, it's so funny how often, I bet 7 times in the last year, I've been contacted by some bro who wants to build a Yeezy company. Because so Yeezys are, let me explain. Yeezys are these, Kanye West has these silly shoes. I have a pair, so I can call them silly. But they're these silly shoes that he puts out. They're from Adidas, but they're called Yeezys. And they drop them only at like Adidas stores and some Foot Lockers and online. And if you can get a pair, they're like $150-$200, but then the resale, they can go up. They can, I don't know, 3-4, some of them, depends on which ones you want. They get really, really high, right? So what a lot of people do, and same with like Supreme and any of these streetwear brands that are hot and sell out in like a second, people have these bots that will sign in, fill out the credit card, and just like immediately do it, as like within seconds of it, of the shoes dropping, because you've automated it and it goes faster than regular people can fill it out, even with like a Chrome autofill. So it's a big business now, because if you can buy 15 pairs of Yeezys and you make $300-$400 a pair, you're swimming in it, right? So people contact me all the time, because I guess they know that I have the tech skill in order to be able to do something like this. I always think that's funny. But anyways, you want to go into some of the tech that you might use to do this automation.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what you'd be using, but you definitely need something to repeatedly run this job. So whether it's like a cron job or something like that, and a cron job is essentially going to run at an interval, and you could send this job to do anything, right? So, hey, this job, go to this page. Maybe you're loading it up in some sort of headless browser. Google has somewhat recently, I guess in the past year, I've lost track of what's recent anymore, but it's definitely within the past year, released something called Puppeteer, which is their own headless Chrome. For a long time, people were using other headless browsers like Phantom.js, but Puppeteer is pretty sweet. It allows you to do all sorts of stuff like generate screenshots and crawl the whole rendered page. I mean, nowadays, everything's a rendered JavaScript page anyway, so it allows you to crawl the page without there necessarily even being like a server-side component to it. Mm-hmm. It lets you use form submissions and all that stuff. So basically, you can use a headless browser like Puppeteer to go ahead and go do something, right? So you might need something to trigger at an interval. You might need something to actually load up the content. And then you'd probably be using your standard JavaScript skills to target elements, fill their values, click on stuff, do that kind of thing. And with the headless browser, it makes it all pretty nice and easy.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this, because I had used Phantom.js quite a bit in the past, and I always ran into, like, I was doing something where I needed screenshots quite often, and I was using Phantom.js, and like, they only updated Chrome like once or twice a year. So if there was something new, and then there was always issues with web fonts and all kinds of stuff. So it was amazing for the time, but now that we have like legit officially supported Chrome, headless Chrome, it's going to be much, much easier.
Yeah, super nice.
Next up, we have proxies. One way that companies and people stop you from doing the stuff that we're talking about is that they will ban your IP address, or they'll only allow so many requests per minute from an IP address. And often what happens is that you need maybe a fresh IP address because yours is tapped out. Sometimes APIs will allow you like 50 requests per IP address per hour. And then if you want to make more than that, then you have to get a secondary IP address. And start making the request from that one, because it looks like you're a separate person, right? If you need to come from a different country, so I've done this quite a bit, even in my browser, when I was buying stamps for my stickers, I was trying to buy US postage from Canada and they weren't allowing me because, like, why would you need to buy US postage as a Canadian, right? So you can flip on a proxy. And in my case, I use a Chrome extension called Falcon Proxy. And then it's actually really easy. In the terminal, you can type SSH minus D and then just SSH into any server that you have. So whether you've got a GoDaddy or a Bluehost or a DigitalOcean or any server that allows you to SSH into it, you can just set up what's called a SOX proxy. And it's just one line of code. And that one line of code will set up a proxy on your computer. And then you can use the Falcon proxy Chrome extension to route all of your browser traffic through that. And that allows you to do things like watch Netflix from the US or any of these. And it's great because it's not a known existing proxy. So often, Netflix won't block. I think they've started to block DigitalOcean IP addresses. But in the early days, I haven't tried it in a long time, but in the early days, you could just SSH your own server. And because it wasn't like a known one of these proxies that you pay for, it would be really easy to do that. And that's how I did it with buying these stamps, is I proxied through my own server that hosts my website. And then another little tip for Canadians who are buying stuff, if you're trying to use your credit card and it's asking for a US address, I've only learned this since I've started accepting credit cards, but your credit card information can be pretty far off and they'll still push the charge through. So if you say, like, I'm in Ontario, I always just say Ohio as my billing address. And then your shipping address has to be different. That has to be wherever you're shipping it to. But your billing address, often they will not give you the ability to put in a Canadian address when you want to use a Canadian credit card. So what you can do is you just set it to Ohio instead of Ontario. And then where the zip code is, you simply just take the numbers out of your postal code and add two zeros. So if your postal code is M5S2P2, you just say 522 and then add 00 on the end, and that's your zip code for Canadians.
Dude, this is wild. I don't know any of this stuff.
Well, it's only because we're Canadians and we're oppressed, and we need to, even like buying gas in the States, if you put your credit card in and ask for your zip code and you don't have a zip code because it's a Canadian card. I used to have to walk in to the store, but now you do the little trick where you take the numbers out of your postal code and add two zeros to the end.
Man, this is some helpful stuff right here. This is real world helpful stuff.
Anyways, what else do we have? API throttling, I talked about that. If you need a fresh IP, you need some sort of proxy. There's services out there that will give you fresh IP addresses. You can also spin up a couple of little DigitalOcean servers at the $5 a month that you need, which is nice because I believe you can just spin them up for a day or two, get that IP address, do your work, and then spin them down. I don't know if you're billed for a full day.
DigitalOcean's great about that. Yeah.
I think they'll just charge you for the day's worth.
Yeah. They've been super good. I mean, there's a lot of talk going on about fresh IPs, but what about talks about fresh books?
Wow. Amazing. Yes, FreshBooks is one of my favorite pieces of software, just because as we talked about today, I'd much rather be working on stuff like this rather than spending time in my business. So to run my invoicing, to run all of my expenses, anytime that I have a receipt, all I have to do is I either have to open up the FreshBooks app on my phone and take a picture of the receipt and enter in the details, or I have my assistant has access to it as well. And she can input all of that for me. You can upload a PNG of it. I love it because at the end of the year, when I need to do my taxes, I have all of my invoices. I have all of my expenses. You can track time if you're doing hourly-based billing. It's really just got everything that you need if you are any sort of small business or freelancer. This is kind of the freelancing sponsored episode today, which is pretty fun. So check them out at freshbooks.com/syntax and use syntax in the how did you hear about us section. Thanks so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring.
Yeah. And now's the time of the year where you really want to get ahead of that stuff, because come towards the end of the year and come towards, you know, that point of time where everything's crazy, the last thing you want to be doing is rushing to get your tax and books in order. So right now, perfect time to do that.
Totally.
Cool. So, So this next little category here is just for general tips and tricks. This is just like little fun stuff. And one of my most favorite fun things that always makes me feel like a hacker, even though it's the dumbest thing in the world, is when a site presents you with an overlay, like you can't view this content, and then you just inspect element and then click delete on your keyboard. I don't know if everyone knows this. I feel like a lot of people probably know this, but if you select any HTML element in the Elements tab of Chrome DevTools, you can delete it just by clicking delete. In addition, you can also edit that HTML if you want. So I love this because there's so many, I mean, people have gotten a little wise to it, but there's some websites that are still not wise to it, or there's some people that are, think they're slick by blocking their content behind a newsletter sign-up form, but they're not truly blocking it.
Dude, yeah, they want the Google search still.
Yeah, they want the Google juice, and so you just inspect it, delete it, boom, you're in. I mean, it's funny because you can just even be like a hacker, you can just be like, I'm in, and get in there and just look at it, whatever. It's great.
It's another little story is the first publication ever to do a paywall was the New York Times. And when it came out, they're like, New York Times, if you read six articles and then at the seventh, they'll put up a paywall, right? And I was like, that's dumb. It's just a div. You can delete it, right? So I wrote a Chrome extension that was one line of CSS that said dot overlay display none. And I pushed it up to the Chrome extension store. And the media went nuts. I was all these articles like hacker writes Chrome extension to defeat the New York, like defeat the paywall. And it eventually got pulled from the Chrome store because I guess I was using the New York Times logo or it was.
No,
I don't know if it was allowed or not, which is hilarious because a lot of people, I got some nasty email from people and it was like a huge thing. Like, should you display none a div? Right.
Oh my God. And you can, I mean, nowadays you could do all that with just a general ad blocker where you could just have your ad blocker with the little eyedropper or something and just say, hey, this guy always block this. It's like built into every ad blocker now.
That's true. And there's also like Chrome extensions that you can have. Like, I forget what the one is that I used to use. Is it called Stylish?
Yeah, Stylish. Stylish. Yeah, Stylish.
Yeah. And there's this like whole like community of user styles where people reskin websites. And I'll often have that like on where if something's annoying me, Kijiji itself, they always have ads for like the most random stuff. So you can like write little rules that select anything that is an ad on Kijiji and just automatically hide it because it's so obnoxious when you're trying to scroll through it and you keep seeing the same crappy bike over and over. what other tips and tricks do we have here? Multiple API keys. So, one thing that we do when I taught at HackerU in Toronto was we would always pull the weather and like get students to display the weather. And I think they give you something like 60 requests per hour, which is almost always more than enough. But if you want to, if a site gets popular, your API key will run out really quickly. So obviously you can pay for more requests, but another way around it is you can just ask for multiple API keys. Give yourself an array and randomly
swap them out
here and there. Obviously, that's not a great way to do a production app, but you're just trying to like build something and you're hitting this block and it's getting in the way. It's kind of one way you can do it. Another way is sometimes you have to apply for an API key and you need to use it right then. What I'll do is I'll just apply for the API key and then it'll take a couple days to get back to us. Like Yelp does this, but just go to GitHub, search like variable var Yelp API key equals, and people publish their API keys to Yelp all the time. And you can just pull a couple off there and use those for the time being until yours gets approved.
Oh man, that one, that one might be pushing the line just a little bit there for me.
And then of course, send a pull request letting the author know that they've put their API key public.
Only after you've utilized it.
Yeah, you've used up their, it's almost always just these like free tier API keys that people do little simple examples with.
Yeah.
And then they pull it in there. What else? Some quick and dirty stuff. Whenever I'm doing any of the scraping, what I'll do is I'll use what's called a text database. Cause like, I don't want to have to like set up a whole MongoDB or whatever and define the schema and stuff like that. So what I like to do is there's this package called DiskDB, which will allow you to use like a MongoDB-like interface, and it'll just store the data in a text file. And I love that because it's really simple. Your text, your data just goes into a text file. It's fairly quick. Probably not good enough. It's not good for production, but you're just trying to save some data to the disk real quickly. You can pull in one of these things, and it uses plain text files to store it as, I think, JSON.
Nice.
Yes. I think that's all the tips and tricks that I have here. I did ask on Twitter what the different stories were. So I think we're just going to wrap up today with a couple different stories that we have. I got a couple myself, and then people tweeted them out.
Yeah, I got at least one or two myself as well. Yeah, I could start with actually one pretty recently. I was, you know, like MLS and Realtor websites, they're like really a giant pain. I was working on an MLS searching website.
Yeah.
And all of these services, their APIs are so bad for tapping into these things. And they would not approve a local host. They were like, what is your URL? And I was like, well, what do you mean? What is my URL? It's localhost. They're like, oh, where is the actual dev name, you know, located? And I was like, well, I'm not going to set up a dev environment just for you, because they actually wanted us to pay for an additional URL that was outside of the production URL. I was like, this is a development URL. Like, even if I'm setting it up a legit URL for this, it's still development. They're like, well, it's an additional cost for an additional URL. And so I was not about to do that because that's absolutely ridiculous. So I went to their demo example of their code, because they have a whole demo shop of here how it's working. And their demo example actually was loading a script that was not checking any sort of anything. It was just loading a single JavaScript file that was the like protected file. So typically it would hit the server, check to make sure your credentials, and then serve that file. But then it was just serving this file. So I just went in the network tab. I sniffed out. I grabbed that particular file. I just copied and pasted it. And then I loaded it up. And then I was using it on my local host. And in no time at all, I had that thing up and running. So that's probably one of my only things like this in this sort of, you know, this universe here. But I was very proud of myself for that one.
That's great. Wow. I have a whole bunch of different stories. I'll just kind of tell them in general. Anytime someone has like a voting thing, often what will happen is that someone from high school who I haven't talked to in 15 years sends me a message on Facebook and say like, hey, I'm trying to vote my baby as the cutest baby ever to win $37 worth of baby food. And they'll just spam you and like to actually vote for their thing. Or my sister was in a photo voting. She like submitted one of her, she's a photographer. She submitted one of her photos to some sort of contest. And I was like, hey, can I hack it? And she's like, go for it. And
can I hack it?
There's a couple other ones that we've done. And the problem with online voting is that it's almost impossible to stop people from cheating it unless you tie it back to something that they really care about, like a Facebook account or a verified email address or a GitHub account. You have to attach it to something. And then the problem with that is that people don't want to sign in with Facebook to vote for something, because Facebook's going to like post some shit for you. Like, oh, I voted for the cutest baby, right? So no one wants to do that. So what often these voting sites will do is they'll just set a little cookie that says has voted true. And you get one vote per day and you can do it. But if you like open up a incognito window, you can re-vote. Or if you delete the cookie, you can re-vote again. So naturally, I'll write a script that will just every second, it'll ping this URL. And if it's done via curl, there is no concept of cookies. And if the security is really weak, it'll just keep hitting it. And I'll always just like, I won't do it so that someone will win, because that's dishonest. I'll do it so it's clear that someone is cheating. Like we, Heather Payne, who she's the creator of HackerU, where I used to teach. She was like in the running for like top entrepreneur. And it was clear that one of the other tech entrepreneurs that in her category was cheating the system. So she's like, all right, who can do this? I was like, allow me. And we wrote a little script and then gave the script to like 10 or 15 other students, and they all ran it. And we were just like, brrr. And then I think what happened was they wrote a script to make sure that they had just more like 25 more votes than we did, so that it wouldn't look like it was.
It was just a.
So then we wrote it. We wrote a script that would like check how many votes they had, and then if there was like. If we were less, we would vote it up until we were like 50 ahead, but then their script would catch up. And then it got out of control because we just had these two robots voting each other up. And then before you knew it, it was like someone had 50 votes, someone had 23 votes, and we had like 10,000 votes.
The first robot warfare was started over votes.
So both people were clearly disqualified and removed from the competition. But how can you run a school called Hacker U and not try to hack the voting when it's clearly done? I feel sorry for the developers behind these things, because they probably built it and like, oh, I hope someone doesn't figure out you can delete the cookie. And that was it.
It's all over once that cookie's gone. These are hilarious.
Anyways, what else have I done? Vanity plate checker. So Ontario, a province where I live, you can enter your driver's license and you can check if three different vanity plates are available. So I was trying to buy like web dev or HTML CSS or something funny. And they only let you check three at a time, and then it's really slow. So again, I built a little script that would take in an array of like 100 different choices, and then it would just run that three thing over and over and over and over. And then I would display all 100 results, whether it was available or not. That one, I don't know. That one might have been sketchy because I attached my driver's license to it, but I never heard from them, because I was like, I don't know. I just did like,
you ain't heard nobody.
100
heard
requests. Anybody. On Twitter, I asked what some possible ones are. Dennis Walsh, he said he made a vehicle auction bidding app that signs into car auction, finds the correct lanes, waits for the right vehicles, and then bids like a human. I thought that was pretty nifty, because that was like the thing back in the day with eBay. You got sniped, where like no one would bid on this thing until 6 seconds before the auction was up, and then you code something to snipe it, right? And they obviously have stuff against that. A lot of online auctions will extend the bidding period for 2 minutes if someone bids in the last 2 minutes, so then it'll kind of keep going, which is frustrating for people that are trying to buy stuff online, which I think is part of why no one really uses eBay anymore.
Yeah, that it was always the most frustrating, because you'd always get sniped. Or like, I don't know, that was like, it was so frustrating, because there was like people that were professional eBayers and they were just always better than you, or they were robots and they were better than you because they're robots, right?
Totally. I hate robots, but I've built a few in my day. Do you have any other ones did you pull any other ones out from here?
Yeah, I was kind of looking.
I got one here. Ben Foster said, a couple years ago, 7-Eleven Australia had a Snickers promotion where the price would change throughout the day based on whether it detected more angry tweets. I built an Electron app that scraped the website and notified me when the price fell below 60 cents. So that's pretty wholesome. I like that, because it didn't. I thought I was reading this. I was like, and then you built a bot that tweeted angry things and the price dropped. And he's like, no, I just like monitored the price. And then once it fell below 60 cents, I guess he bought a whole bunch of Snickers.
That's hilarious.
Ray Riel, which sounds like a very Canadian name. I think he's Canadian. He has this talk called My Hockey Team Sucks. And I didn't watch the whole talk. It's about half an hour, but I did a quick look over it, and it sounds like he did some scraping and data parsing to get some data stats from stuff that he needed. So I love hearing stories about this kind of stuff. So I'm gonna watch this talk. It's from the Forward JS conference.
Yeah.
And I would check it out. We'll put the link in the show notes.
This one's also pretty good from J. Scott Chapman. He says that he wrote a puppeteer app that basically replies thank you to every single person that wrote happy birthday on his Facebook wall. I was dying when I read that one. It was hilarious.
Oh, that's super good. I like that a lot. Probably one of the best scraping things that we haven't talked about is YouTube DL. We've talked about it on the podcast a couple times before, but it's a command line utility that will download like MP4s or anything from YouTube, Vimeo, like a whole bunch of other sites, and all you have to do is pass it a video ID or a URL or a playlist. And I did this before our trip. We went to the cottage. I downloaded a whole bunch of, my kids are super into these, like watching other kids play with toys and then trying to recreate it. It's this like, I never knew it was a thing, but there's these women.
YouTube is weird. Yeah.
On YouTube that are like grown and they play with toys. Like they would just like buy like Paw Patrol, or like they just like buy trolls and they just like play with them. Be like, oh, I'm going to save Mayor. And then my kids prefer to watch this woman play with her toys versus the actual Paw Patrol show, right? And
it's so weird.
It's so bizarre. And this woman is making millions. It's called the Fizzy Fun Toy Show or something like that. This woman is making millions of dollars off of just playing toys online.
That's so weird.
It's so bizarre. But when it's time to watch TV, that's what they want to do. And then it's kind of fun because then when it is playtime, you can tell that their playtime is much more imaginative, which is kind of cool. Anyways, I needed to download a whole bunch of those for the iPad because I wanted it offline. So you can just pass it a playlist ID and it'll download all of them for offline. And then I use the VLC app on the iPad just to play the MP4s.
Nice. Super cool. Do you have anything else here?
I don't think so. I think that's we're running up on an hour here. I think it's amazing that you can fill an hour with all these crazy scraping.
Yeah, share your stories of fun stuff you've done like this. If there's anything particularly adventurous or fun or interesting, we'd love to see what you're doing. I am so intrigued by all of these things, and we'll pass them along and share them along so everyone else can get inspired by some of your crazy stuff. Don't take it too intense, though. I don't know if we need any legal situations on our hands here. Yeah.
No, don't. If you do not call me if you're in jail or anything like that, because make sure everything's on the up and up. Don't do anything illegal.
Don't hack presidential candidates. Don't do that one.
Awesome. What about a sick pick? Do you have any sick picks today?
Yeah, I got a sick pick. This is a game I've been playing a lot. It's called Octopath Traveler. It's a RPG for Nintendo Switch, and it is awesome. It sort of takes you back to the days of like Super Nintendo RPGs, and it's if you're a fan of this style of game, like Final Fantasy games or whatever, it's sort of like a can't miss. The graphic style is like brilliant. It sort of looks like 8-bit, but it's 3D, and it ends up with this really great tilt shift camera, and everything is sort of this. It's hard to explain, but the visual aesthetic for this thing is so cool. But on top of that, the game's great. It's all about these stories and these people. Again, if you like Final Fantasy type games, you can't miss it. But let me tell you, not only is this game awesome, but the soundtrack is awesome. In fact, for a game that's of this size, like it's not like a triple A title or something. It's not like, I mean, it's made by Square Enix, but it's not like the biggest game of the year. The soundtrack is one of the best video game soundtracks I've heard in a long time. So I've been playing this on YouTube all the time because I don't think it's on Spotify yet, but it's great, like full orchestra stuff, and it's just really nice.
It's wicked. I'll need to check. I need to start playing games. I never play games, but every time you talk about these, like that food one as well you talked about, what's that called?
The food one's great. Overcooked. And we actually had a ton of people tweet out saying how much they love Overcooked. In fact, I just had a buddy over and we ended up playing Overcooked for like the entire weekend because it's so much fun. And it's a way different experience. We had three people in the kitchen instead of two people, and all of a sudden everything changed. It was like a completely different game.
Wicked. All right. I've got two YouTube channels that I'm going to recommend because I love watching YouTube, especially like when I have lunch or if I've got like half an hour of downtime. Rather than just like flipping on the TV, I'll often just find some YouTube, and I've got all kinds of different interests. And a couple of the ones that I've been into lately has been, first is AVE, which is Arduino versus Evil, it used to stand for. And it's actually a guy from Ontario. It sounds like he's from Northern Ontario because he talks like, you know who Don Cherry is?
Yeah, so yeah.
He kind of talks grapes? Like Don no,
is
Cherry.
That, is he Grapes? What is Don Cherry, is his nickname Grapes?
I don't know.
I think it is. I could just be talking out of, I swear.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, that's right.
Yes, Grapes. Yep, there we go. Got it.
He kind of talks like him, but I don't know. He has just a hilarious way of, it's very, don't watch around your kids. There's lots of swearing in it. But what he does is he opens up tools and electronics. Like, you can tell he's a super smart guy because he's got a, you can tell he's got a background in electronics. He, you can tell he's got a background in like metalworking and heavy tools. And not that those are, electronics kind of interest me, but what he'll do is he'll take like a DeWalt drill and open it up, and he'll explain the different materials, how it's made, how it's die cast, why something might be good quality or not. And I find it just fascinating to hear about that side of, I don't know, of how things are made. And then the other one is Musty One, M-U-S-T-I-E One. And he does a lot of small engine stuff where he'll he'll go to a yard sale and pick up like a go-kart or a boat motor or a generator for like $3. And then he'll he'll try to fix it. And what I've learned, it's always the carb. I've watched like 20 of these videos, and it's always the carb. He's always cleaning carbs, pretty much. That's what I've learned. But it's kind of interesting because he's just got this nice kind of cadence that he goes through fixing stuff and explains how things are broken and when it's worth fixing and whatnot. So that was pretty good one as well.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've been a huge fan of YouTube overall lately. So it's like one of those things that I've been publishing YouTube content for so long, and it's like only now have I been like, wow,
yeah,
there's so much good stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, especially because it's like stuff. You're finding people outside of the, like, yeah, there's like vloggers and tech guys on YouTube and people that live in vans and stuff like that. But there's this whole like other side. Like, if you want to learn anything, I think it's such a good way to just open up your mind. I put all these videos on 2X and I just like just watch and watch and watch and watch. And like, I know a weird amount about small engines and how electronics are made and solar panels and all kinds of, like, it just these weird rabbit holes that YouTube puts me down. I got super into these like off-grid living people that are like building houses with solar panels on top. Maybe that's why, how I like, I was watching solar panels, and then I got into these people that build these like tiny houses with solar panels. And most of the time I'm just shaking my head because I can't imagine, but it's super interesting to see someone build something and be really knowledgeable about that.
I've recently stumbled down the rabbit hole of photography based YouTube, and there is so many photography channels. Oh my god, there's so many of them. And one of the best part about photography channels or videography, whatever, for cameras is that they all look good because all these people have great cameras and great equipment, so all of the content looks great. And I'm just like watching, it's like, ooh, what lens and what camera, okay. And now I know all the, you know, I'm identifying lenses and whatever. And I've always, you know, been somewhat into it, but I've never been this into it. And now I'm like, okay, I got to get this and this and this and this. And okay, everyone's using this and everyone's using that. And this is what I need to be into. It's so funny. There's like, it's just like web development. There's like specific trends that you can tell that people are latching onto right now and what they were latching onto several months ago. And what's the new hotness and stuff. It's just a whole nother world. It's awesome.
That's great. I also really enjoy watching rope swing fails. You know, like people.
Oh yeah, dude.
Just
those are great.
Shit, or like trying
gym
to
fails.
Yeah, yeah. People, I used to not be able to watch America's Funniest Home Videos because I would just like cringe because people get really hurt on these videos, right? It's like ha ha, but like no, that guy probably was in the hospital, right?
Dude, there's no better videos than people falling at weddings on America's Funniest Home Videos while they're dancing or whatever. Yeah. We had this upstairs roommate in college, and they didn't have a TV, and we had a TV and cable, and she would only come down to hang out when America's Funniest Home Videos was on. She would knock on, she'd know the schedule, she'd just knock on the door, and she'd be like, America's Funniest Home Videos is on. Be like, oh, yeah, by all means, use the TV. Go right ahead.
Oh, that's true. That was a really good show when people weren't totally getting ruined.
All nice. Right. Okay. So much for the undocumented.
Shameless plugs?
Level Up Pro. I have a new course coming out on Apollo Client. It's specifically on Apollo Client more so than anything else, but Apollo Client with React. So in this course, we set up a very super basic API. It's a totally open API. It's with Graph CMS and it's just set up and we almost set it and forget it. And then after that's open, we explore all of the cool and interesting features in Apollo, such as optimistic UI and pagination and caching, persistent caching, local state, and all sorts of cool stuff. It's all about Apollo. So check it out. It's going to be level one Apollo with GraphQL. It's going to be on Level Up Tutorials this month. So sign up for Level Up Pro, get access to that this month. And Level Up Pro is going to have a new series every single month. I've been going for a little while now and tons of new content all the time. If you sign up for a year, you save 25%. So that's the way to do it, in my opinion.
Wicked. I'm just going to plug my courses in general. If you don't know, I create web development courses at westboss.com/courses. You can pick one up. I've got some stuff coming up on GraphQL and some JavaScript stuff and some big platform improvements too. I've been working under the hood on some big improvements there. Nothing's been pushed yet though. So hold tight. It's coming soon. And I think that's it for today.
Nice. Cool. Well, we'll catch you in the next one.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.